This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
You are listening to the iFanboy.com Pick of the Week podcast, episode 201, sponsored by iVerse Comics, discount comic book service, audible.com, and of course, iFanboy members and listeners like you.
Our teenage dream, so hard to beat, every time she walks down the street, another girl in a neighborhood, wish she was mine, she looks so good, I wanna hold you, wanna hold you.
Hello and welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 201. We're not in a comic shop this week. I am Josh Flanagan. I'm here with Connor Kilpatrick.
Well, hello, Josh.
Whoa, wait. Someone turned it on.
Oh, no, he's in therapy again. And Ron Richards.
Hello.
And he's in another Broadway show. At iFanboy.com, we like comic books. We read them. Every week we read a big stack of them, and then one of us in alternating threes has to pick the issue that they like the best that week. They call that the pick of the week, write a review about it up on the website. We come here, we talk about that, center the conversation around it, and then talk about the other books from the week and other stuff that we want to talk about. Before we get going, we are going to talk about the books from the week, so there may be some spoilers if you haven't read your books yet. Come back later after you have. You'll probably enjoy it more, and that would be cool. This week, boy, I wish that I had the pick this week instead of last week. But Ron, you did. So.
I did, and there were a lot, and I had a lot of options. In fact, there were four books that were in the running when it came down to it at the end of the evening on Thursday. And by the way, before I get into this, you know, a day off on Monday is great, but I don't know if it's worth it for the havoc that the Thursday Comics Day has put into my life. You have no idea. This is
It throws everything off.
It throws everything off.
The axis is just twisted.
Yeah, it's just not fair. But I powered through somehow.
You poor bastard. How do you ever deal?
Yeah. But so I powered through, and I had a pretty hearty stack this week. It was funny because I think what was last week, there was a lot of the more offbeat and indie books, and this week was just, for me personally, was just all Marvel and DC. And, you know, there are a couple of indies littered about in there. But at the end of the day, the book that I had the most fun reading and the book that I enjoyed the most was Kick-Ass number 7. And I wrote the review up on iFanboy.com. You can go read it there. And I was saying, you know, there are tons of, you know, for like every good book, I think every book that is really evocative or really brings out discussion has both detractors and supporters. And it's easy to slam this book for the delays and for the sporadic release schedule. I know, Josh, you've been particularly critical of the story and that you don't really know where it's going anywhere and you don't like when it's, you know, the kind of meta references to the comics and things like that.
Well, hold on. I haven't thought about this book in months.
Right.
So you're
more in the first camp then about the lateness.
See, for a while I said there's no story, and then at one point it was fucked up.
Yeah.
It was fucked up.
And that was enough. I was fine with that. Yeah. And then I forgot about it. So when it showed up this week, I was like, oh, yeah, this book.
Yeah.
So I'd forgotten any preconceived notions I may have had.
Yeah. Well, that's good then. So, but what really made it stick out for me that made it the pick of the week was for three reasons. One was that this might be some of the best work of John Romita Jr.'s career.
I think it is the best.
Yeah, I mean, and I don't know if it's the combination of what he's doing with Tom Palmer on inks and Dean White on colors, but like from this issue is bookended by two full page splash pages. The first one, the first page of the issue, has got the Red Mist character betraying Kick-Ass and hitting him on the head with a gun, and the last page has got Kick-Ass and Hit Girl, the little girl with the swords, in an elevator about to go kick some ass. And those two pages just basically sum up just how the colors and like the use of color, you know, the primary colors of their costumes and the blood, and as well as just like Romita has a definite style with his noses and his faces and things like that, but it's tighter and it's not as like I think back to some of the World War Hulk stuff that he did, and that was a little more
it was sketchier.
Yeah, it was rougher.
You got really bold lines here. Yes. All the lines are strong. Yeah.
I feel like he's a guy who, and this is speculation, I feel like he really lives or dies on the strength of his inker.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, World War Hulk was Klaus Janson inking him, so there was no, you know, that's not a slouch, but maybe they just don't fit together.
Not that his work on World War Hulk was bad, and when Klaus Janson inks him, it's good, but it's a different kind of image.
Sure.
It comes off. They definitely have a different kind of synergy, different than Romita and Tom Palmer, which, you know, and for whatever reason, it's working on this.
Mm-hmm.
That was the first reason. The second reason is because, you know, everyone knows I get very emotional when I read my comics and stuff like that, and I love the you know, all right, you know, throw your hand in the, you know, fist in the air and you know, like the person you're rooting for. And there was definitely a moment in this where Kick-Ass, our main hero, pulls himself up. He's on the edge. He's going to get killed, and he's able to fight back. And then he gets some help from Hit Girl. And there was definitely a couple scenes towards the end of the issue that were just like you could not root for them.
No, well, hold on. Now, the way you describe it is he got up and he fought his way. And that's not what happened. And
if it had
happened, that would have been incredibly boring.
Yeah.
What he did was stand up and get his ass kicked for a while.
True, yeah, good point.
That was his rope-a-dope move. Yeah. He was like, you know what I'm going to do here? I'm going to win this by getting the shit beat out of me.
He got his shit beat out of him, and then he stood up and he was about to, and then she jumped in.
Is he's good at getting beat up.
Yeah,
that
exactly.
Seems to be
– That's a superpower.
Kick-Ass is sort of a joke.
Yeah. But the
he's like the guy from the Cinderella Man movie, Russell Crowe. He kept getting hit over and over and over, never go down.
Okay, then
tire the other guy out.
So, but the real the main reason why where I like this issue so much was that I kind of had a realization about what Miller's doing with this book. And spoiler, we gave the spoiler warning, but just, you know, I'm going to tell what happens in the issue. So Kick-Ass gets betrayed by the Red Mist, and the mob has captured Kick-Ass as well as Big Daddy and Hit Girl, the father and daughter team. And the previous issue, I think, was the origin story of Big Daddy and Hit Girl. And we hear how he's an ex-cop and his wife was brutally murdered by the mob. So he wants vengeance and he trains his daughter and stuff like that. In this issue, we find out it's all bullshit, that he was an accountant. And he just wanted his daughter to live an exciting life, and he was a fan of comics, and so he decided to make, you know, to train and become vigilantes. And you realize that Big Daddy wasn't much different than Kick-Ass, and it was that kind of moment or that kind of characterization, and then the dancing that Miller's doing between the excessive violence and the superhero theatrics and the real reality and the real life aspects of it, and really trying to stand up for yourselves and do something and make a life that's worth, you know, that's interesting. I just really was really digging it in this issue. And I kind of didn't realize it until this issue.
You know, what's funny is that, and this goes against what everybody thinks about the way that I look at comic books or anything for that matter, but like I would have had a hard time writing a review about this because I don't really see all that much deepness, or it just—it's sort of a—it's a big visceral comic book, and I feel like that's actually its draw in this one sense. I don't know. I don't feel like there's a lot of subtext going on at all.
Oh, I thought this was drooling with subtext.
Perhaps.
Yeah, I mean, just to seeing the you know, like when Big Daddy finally, like, they've been, so the mob tortures Kick-Ass and Big Daddy, and the torturing of Kick-Ass was particularly painful, you know, in terms of car batteries attached to testicles. But you know, but like the whole question of why is Big Daddy going after the mob, and they're like, and the Kick-Ass says, he's like, oh, he's an ex-cop, he killed his wife, and they're like, I don't remember any ex-cops, like I don't remember any wife killed, like the mob had no idea why, and he finally breaks out and he goes, you know, I just want to give my daughter an exciting life, you know, like I didn't want her growing up watching American Idol, he's like, and he's a comic fan, and turns out he's been selling his comics to fund their operation.
Right, but that's still very servicey. What's the subtext?
No, the subtext is the idea of wanting to do something more, and the idea that what Kick-Ass is doing, which seems so ridiculous and seems so idiotic, actually isn't, because this guy is doing it as well. And it's just this desire of people.
I don't know. I think it's pretty idiotic to say.
I do. But there's this, the idea of trying to be something better and to stand up in this world of violence and insanity and stuff like that. I mean, it definitely plays on the.
To me, if there's any subtext, it's that. It's the attack on crazy fanboys and how stupid it is to be a
That's
crazy fanboy.
That's kind of more what I got.
Yeah, I don't see
yeah,
that.
I mean, if anything, yeah. it's an attack on the fans. But
yeah.
For me, and I don't care about the lateness because it's a creator-owned book and they have to do paying work, but what the lateness is doing for me is taking me out of caring about the story.
Yeah.
You know, like I don't immerse myself in the world because I don't remember the last issue or what happened in it.
Right. Which is funny.
I thought I missed something. I was like, did I forget?
Which is funny because for some reason that and with other books doesn't bother me. I don't know why I'm able to remember, but like I remember exactly what happened in the last issue and I picked right back up of it and that doesn't bother me personally.
As I got 3 or 4 pages in, I remembered, but the thing is like when I get to a book and hold it in my hands and don't know where it's going because I don't know where it's been.
Right.
It takes you out of really caring about the characters because I experience these guys for 5 to 10 minutes once every 4 or 5 months.
Right.
And so therefore I don't really care about them because who knows when I'm gonna see them again.
Yeah. I could see that, but I'm able to care about them. I mean
What I'm thinking when I'm saying I don't feel like this is a greater message. Like I literally feel like when they do the script or when they do the artwork, they're just giggling on each page. That's funny.
It's not. I don't think it's that juvenile. I don't think
really.
It's that, no,
I totally
so
get that feeling.
I don't
and
think
I'm
so
cool
at all.
With that. Yeah. So you know, if you like it one way and I can like it another, that's fine. But that's the feeling that I get out of it.
Yeah, I know. I mean, and it was with this issue, and then also like I said, like with this whole mirroring of like what world are we looking into in terms of this tongue-in-cheek, jokey, like giggling on each page versus actually somewhat heady. I think he's doing a little bit of both. It was great. It was a lot of fun. At the end of the issue, looking at the art and looking at the pages, this is the one that I came back with that I had the most fun reading, and that was just definitely stood out for me.
I think we'll know for sure, or not for sure. We'll know better what he's intending with the last issue.
Yeah,
how it ends up for the characters will really let us know what he's trying to say, whether or not it's a serious or juvenile.
What the message is? Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
I'm still not sure.
Yeah,
I know one thing though, and this was really important when I was reading it. I thought, well, this is kind of my favorite issue of it so far, and I think that the two words are fucked up. and to really, I mean, it came back this time. I was like, oh right. And this was way more than the last time I went on that tirade. I was like, that's just all messed up.
Right.
I don't know. I mean, the last time we went on the tirade was when the girl took a sword to everybody in issue for the entire issue. I mean, that was really fucked up.
She did it again.
Yeah,
but only once.
Which, by the way, if you've seen the footage from the movie online, it's that scene, and it's awesome. Just the idea of the 10-year-old girl with swords kicking ass is a fantastic idea.
Well, I suppose the thing that I enjoyed about it, I was like, it's fun, whatever. Yeah. Like I didn't think about it like that. So for me, that was the release of it. I had a lot of fun with this issue, and I think I'd gone in thinking, this again, but it was good.
Well, but you can be thankful that I picked it because the runner-up to Pick of the Week was most likely and by the way, Marvel is stepping into this world of not good comic titles again. Remember a couple years ago when we had X-Men The End, Book 3, yada yada?
Man and X-Men.
So Dark Avengers, Uncanny X-Men, Exodus, Conclusion. Number one.
That's
one book. Yeah,
I thought it was two.
No, it's one.
I saw the script.
The indicia is actually pretty funny. Dark Avengers / Uncanny X-Men / Exodus number one. But yeah, so this was the runner up, and it's amazing to see how this whole Utopia crossover storyline started off with me hating it and ending up with me loving it.
I noticed that the web was a tingle.
Yeah.
With people really going, wow, that started out awful, but it ended great.
Is this
all Matt Fraction?
Well, I guess it's all Matt Fraction. I mean, I'm going to guess it's Fraction and his editor. And Axel, Axel Alonso moving the story in the direction they want it to be.
I just meant he wrote the whole thing.
He wrote the whole issue. Yeah, it's Axel, and really the only reason, one of the reasons why I didn't pick it was it was Matt Fraction writing it and Mike Diodato and Terry Dodson. And the changing of gears between Diodato and Dotson was too much for me. It was like it was too jerky. Yeah,
that's a big tonal shift.
It was, but this was great because it was the X-Men Avengers face off, and the X-Men kicked ass. And this is really this is going to go down as one of Cyclops' shining moments, in that he enacted a plan, executed on it, and totally completed and kicked ass on it.
you love him like you're a manager. like Scott came in with his business plan, he took it to action, his team really went and they kicked ass on it and executed.
Well, I mean, admittedly, I have a little pride in Cyclops being my favorite character, and also the belief that the X-Men, you know, what Whedon said is that the X-Men are Cyclops' story. It's not Professor Xavier's story. It's not Jean Grey's story. It's Cyclops' story. And this just was, you know, there's a couple of great moments in this. Did you guys read it, or am I solo on it?
No.
You're solo.
Okay, there was one moment where, so the Dark Avengers step into it, and the ship kind of pulls in, and they're ready for the face-off, and Bullseye/Hawkeye jumps out of the plane and does this kind of barrel roll and shoots off three arrows, and then the immediate panel below it is Cyclops going to himself, "My God, Osborn's dressed up Bullseye as a hero." Like, he saw it right through. He saw right through the costume. And then just like little moments throughout it, as each of the X-Men face off against, you know, against different folks on the Avengers, leading up to, you know, Norman Osborn holding up Cyclops, you know, above his head, you know, in the promo pose that was from the beginning of the storyline, and him just saying, you know, "Give up, it's over, you've lost," and Cyclops just laughing, going, "Oh, Norman, if only you see things the way I see them." And then Danny Moonstar comes flying in on a winged horse, because now she's Valkyrie again, and just ass, like with cavalry coming in, and just the team kicks ass and wipes the Avengers, you know, mops them up and down, and it ends with, you know, all the X-Men standing there against Norman, and the press is there, and realizing that if, you know, if they're going to kill one of them, they got to kill all of them. That will be a PR nightmare. So the Avengers back away, and the X-Men win, which was great. And so now we've got Asteroid M sitting out in the Pacific Ocean as an island, and Cyclops declares it as a safe haven for all mutants. And again, you know, a little bit of a repeating of the trope with San Francisco when they moved to San Francisco, saying, you know, "Our doors are open to you." But it was just, it was a lot of positive feeling about the X-Men in this issue. So
Connor, did you follow most of that?
Yes.
There was some words in there that I didn't get.
No, I knew. I followed it.
You couldn't
mostly
just play along.
I've read the Many People versus Norman story 45 times.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
You couldn't play with the joke.
Yep.
So, I don't want to be the mean guy. You're the mean guy.
Yeah, exactly.
But, I thought it was fun.
Yeah, but so yeah, it was really good. But the art changes. The art changes were what kind of.
Wasn't it when they were on a different kind of psychic plane when the arc?
Yeah, basically it was the opening scene with Emma and Scott in their bedroom, which is a flashback, was Dotson, and then Emma and the Sentry inside the Sentry's head was Dotson.
Was there any crying?
No, there was no crying. There was no, and apparently a little bit of the Void is now inside Emma's head, which is
she'll start crying.
Yeah,
now.
Yeah, exactly.
He's gonna start weeping at any drop of the hat.
Yeah, exactly.
If there was no crying, there's a good chance there was baseball, because from what I understand, there is no crime. Anyway,
well, you're not working at all today, are you?
Yeah,
no. But the third runner up to the pick of the week was Adventure Comics number 2.
Let me just say, it was a great week
for art.
Yes, yes.
Page 2 and 3 of this book was literally like the best 2-page splash I've seen in I don't know how long.
And followed up by later on, there's the page of Superboy and Wonder Girl kissing in front of the moon, the last page of the story.
Yep.
And then also when Wonder Girl opens the door, when he opens the door and it's her, like Manipole, the full page of Manipole with the title page with all the credits. Mm-hmm. I'm so all about Francis Manipole right now.
Well, the thing that got me about, if you look at that two page spread, like look at the perspective of like where the Brainiac skull head thing is, and like, you know, and then the foreground you've got the giant tentacle. It's just this really neat sort of multi-plane thing, and I was really, really impressed by it. It was fun.
I love the coloring. It's almost kind of got a watercolory influence to it, and it's beautiful. Who is coloring it?
Bucalato.
Never heard of Bucalato.
I don't care about Superboy. I don't care about the half Lex, half Superman thing. I don't care about any of this, but this book, I cannot put it down.
I thought they're using Superboy is a character that I never really had much regard for. I mean, he was all right, but he was, you know, just a character. I never really loved him like people do who came along in the 90s. But he's really doing a good job of making me care about him. And I love the trope of he's, you know, he's half, he's made of DNA. He's a clone of Superman, but he's also a clone of Lex Luthor. He's half and half.
Yep.
So he can't decide which one he's going to be, because at times he's been evil as well as heroic. And I like the note, I mean, the list he's keeping.
Yeah.
And this one, he's got a date, so the thing he's focused on is Lex is bald. Yeah. And I was laughing at it with him in the mirror, you know, examining the hair, looking for hair falling out because he's got a girl coming over. And I thought, it's just a neat, he's really tuned into these characters. And we know from talking to Geoff Johns that Superboy's one of his favorites. The only thing that I had a weird, you know, continuity problem with was after Superboy died, in the Titans books, Robin and Wonder Girl started dating.
Yeah.
And they just kind of glossed over it and said, oh, we kissed once and that was it. And either that's for just lying or them retconning it, but...
Yeah, well, I think they're just trying to take the attention away from it and you know, and I guess she, you know, her feeling the guilt over it now that he's back and, yeah, but man, it
looks
good. Other
than that, and also the backup story with the Legion I really enjoyed, even though I know nothing about the Legion and...
That art is awesome.
The art was awesome, and the whole idea was that there's this planet where everybody's a twin and this one guy wasn't a twin. We find that he actually was a twin there was enough information to follow along, and I found it really interesting, even though I knew nothing about them, and I thought it was a really good 1-2 punch. Yeah.
I actually like started to be like, I'm not going to read this, and I was reading. I was like, this is not terrible. It's like
he's the Legion
like a
story?
Yeah, the Legion story. I was like, this is almost interesting. He's kind of like the artist is kind of like a Cassaday light, I guess, sort of part Cassaday, part.
I see a lot of Otley in it too.
Yeah, I see that.
See that too.
So Clayton Henry, is that it?
Clayton Henry, yep.
Anyway, it was a good little co-feature.
Cool.
As the parlance.
No, but I'm loving this little run on Adventure Comics. I'm loving mainly because of the art, and I can't wait. The news this week that broke that Manipal and Johns will be doing the Flash ongoing. It's just gonna be pure bliss for me. It makes up for the fact that it's not Kershaw. So. Yeah. But so in the last book that was in the running was the Dark Horse and the Surprise book, yet another bad Marvel title book, Dark Reign, the List, Avengers number one, the one shot. I thought that I was gonna hate this book because Marko Djurdjevic was doing the art. And he's done covers for Daredevil and other stuff for Marvel, and he's done this very photorealistic, painterly kind of look. And I opened the issue, and it was some freaking awesome pencils.
Yeah. Absolutely, I 100% agree. I'm not a fan of painted stuff, and I was reading this, so I was like, who is really that guy?
It was great. It was like big surprise for me for the week. My only complaint about this book is I don't understand why it's just not New Avengers next issue.
Yeah, but I actually wasn't even going to buy this, so I'm glad that I did on a whim because it was Bendis. But you're right. I mean, I would have missed a major sort of turning point.
Yeah.
And also I would have missed the moment of the week, which was them talking about the famous hypothetical, would you go back and kill Hitler? And Bucky going,
I did.
I killed Hitler.
Bucky and this has been great.
What?
Yeah, exactly.
I killed Hitler.
So,
by the way, that would stop any conversation.
Yeah.
Like everyone would move. Oh, okay, forget it. We'll move on. No, we're going to talk about this.
I did, but this issue is focuses on Ronan's harping on wanting to kill Norman Osborn and the Avengers disagreeing with him. I like how it pulled in the stuff that's going on in the X-Men. You know, we get a little brief. We get Ronan watching TV and watching what's happening on the in San Francisco with the X-Men Island emerging, saying we should help them, and you know, and then he finally goes out on his own and goes to take out Norman.
I really dug this because it's basically a Clint on his own story, except what it did was, and this is actually one of the reasons I like the character, by the way, this is my favorite Avengers issue in a while. I really enjoyed this. I feel like it should have come months sooner, but whatever. I like that, like, he went in, he started kicking ass, but really he was completely overmatched, and they showed it.
Yep.
You know, like, because that is, like, he would get his ass kicked. Yeah. I love that he ran into Moonstone, and they knew each other back from the Thunderbolts days.
Yep, exactly. Yeah.
I love that. That was awesome.
And he's like, I got a pass? And she's just like, too many cameras, you know? It was good. It was good. And we got an arrow to Dawkins' head, which was fantastic. He gets to Norman, and then turns out Norman has Nick Fury's body shield, which I didn't even know Nick Fury had.
Well, Nick Fury has all kinds of crap you don't know about.
Exactly. It doesn't matter. You just make it up as you go. Oh, yeah, Nick Fury had one of these.
Yeah, so it ends with basically Osborn capturing Ronan and what should have been an Avengers issue. And then I laughed because at the end of the page, I turned the page to the two-page spread of the list checklist. Did you have to use the word checklist promoting an event called The List? Really?
The List Square. The List List.
Yeah.
And I saw that. I saw that 2 pages, and I thought, oh, I'm not buying any of these. And I went, oh, Alan Davis.
Oh, the Alan Davis pages McGinnis, look so good. Yeah.
Remender Romita Jr., yeah. Jason Aaron. Oh, fuck. I'm going to end up buying at least half of these.
Yeah. Yeah. And but so apparently you're going to have to read it in order to see the storyline go, which kind of sucks too. But
I'm going to put that to the test.
Yeah.
I'm going to see if I can read half of them and figure out the story.
But yeah, but so aside from it not being an Avengers issue, aside from the awful title, Dergovic's pencils were just a wonderful surprise.
And it was a great story. Yeah. It was a really great story.
Why doesn't that guy pencil a regular book?
He should, yeah.
You know? Yeah. I'm cool with that. Yeah. So if it were my pick of the week.
Wait a minute. I'm confused because last week's show you said you had dropped this book.
Yeah.
No.
Yes, you did. You said you didn't like
the Witchfinder book.
Right, because it was too slow, which is why you were going to drop Wild Hunt because it was too slow.
You're getting me off track, and it doesn't matter. This is issue number 6 of Hellboy the Wild Hunt. Issue number 5 came out after a two or three, four-month hiatus, something like that. And it came back, and I was really confused and sort of didn't like the last issue of it. And I was like, bah, meh, like that. And so I picked this one up, and I sort of reluctantly started to read it. And this is the best issue of Hellboy that I've read in I don't know how long. And
Everybody was freaking out.
And if this was my pick of the week, I would have made it my pick of the week. And Ron's a crowd pleaser. I would have gotten that 10% who are reading this book. And they would have been like, he's totally right. And everyone else would have been, shut up. And
it was a 4.9 average rating on iFanboy out of 5.
Okay.
So it was,
do you want to hear what happens? Because it's awesome.
Sure.
Okay, well, the thing is, it's
I'm still backing when you said I'm a crowd pleaser.
Basically, you're a
he's making a list. He's making a list of his own.
I know. Yeah. Wait a minute. I got a lot of shit for Kick-Ass, but anyway, go on. Carry on.
Shouldn't have. Yeah. Hellboy has been kicking around for I don't know how long, like wandering, waiting for what is going to happen. You know, like he left the BPRD a long time ago. And it's just sort of he keeps running into these demons and creatures and things, and they tell him something. He's like, I don't want to hear it, and he walks away. And, like, it's been a little monotonous. So in this one, it starts off, and he goes – like, the whole miniseries started off, and he went off with a bunch of English people on a hunt for giants. The giants kill everybody, and he – I don't even remember how he ended up somewhere else with this red-haired Irish girl. And they're in a castle with Morgan Le Fay. Of course, you may remember her. She's on Marvel, I think, recently.
Wasn't she also in the first story, the first Hellboy story?
Lord knows if I remember.
She's a classic character.
She's the.
It's not the Marvel. It's not. It's the crossover.
No, anything.
Was she the one that brought Rasputin back in the first story? Or was that another woman?
Might have been, but she. And anyway, she's part of the Arthurian legend. Morgana. She's the one who. I think she's Arthur's sister, but also the they slept with each other. So like her son Mordred is Arthur's. It's basically
her son and her nephew.
Right, exactly. So, and this is a classic story. If you've ever seen Excalibur, which I watched way too much as a kid and clearly shouldn't have.
I love that movie.
They're sitting down, and basically, okay, here's your big spoiler. The whole reveal is that Hellboy is one of the three heirs of Arthur who survived. And that's why, and he's half demon, and that's
really?
Why he's alive. And so basically, And look at if you look at the cover, there's a big sword in the front, and then behind Hellboy, there's like a picture of King Arthur, and basically he's the heir to the Arthurian throne in the Sword of the Stone.
Wow!
So he's the son of King Arthur.
Yeah, no, he's the grandson. He's the son. He's the I forget exactly how
I thought
it
he was works. Son of the devil.
He's I forget. I'd have to read through the whole thing and tell you exactly what it is. But he's the rightful king of Britain. Basically, I know. There's only one heir who survived all the way through with the blood of Arthur, and she married a demon, and then had 3 kids, and of that, Hellboy was the one who survived because he was born in hell, because he was half.
So okay, I understand. So she had the sex with the demon.
He's the first male descendant
the demon
of Mordred. He's the first
demon
male
sex.
Descendant of Mordred, son of Arthur, okay. Rightful king of Britain.
Ron,
and
how many
so,
condoms
like,
with the demon sex? 3 at least.
They keep incinerating with the flame.
Right.
So it's
it depends on if he's made of stone. Anyway,
the whole box.
He shows up in a field.
I can't feel anything.
looking at a sword sticking out of a stone, and like it all like his whole story of why, you know, he's supposed to be the king of the world, and he's got that little crown that floats over his head, but he's also half demon. Like, all of a sudden, they make a huge reveal in the Hellboy universe, and it was great.
Fascinated to talk to Mike Mignola and find out if this was all along or if this was a new development he came across.
I don't know. It's taken over a decade to get to this point, but it would be an interesting question. But it was just a fun and cool and big development, and it wasn't like it was related to some small Romanian fable that you've never heard. It was Arthurian major, legend. Yeah. So
that's cool. That's very cool.
It was a really great issue too. Good. Good looking, all that stuff. So, yes.
So I'm very
Arthur's. I think that's the drunk guy, right?
Yeah, Arthur Treacher. He's the fish stick guy.
Nice. So I'm curious what you guys thought of Blackest Night Batman number 2.
I think that it's a shame that Tomasi didn't get a regular Batman book.
It's a damn shame.
Oh, I was gonna say
he does.
Oh wow, I was gonna say wow. Talk about going off the rails. One of the worst comics I read this week.
No, it was awesome. Oh, he does the best Batman. He does the best Dick Damian relationship outside of Morrison. That really makes you. Like it doesn't get dealt with in other books, but he does it really well here, and it's a damn shame he doesn't have one of the regular books.
I thought this totally went off the rails and all the flamethrower stuff, and not the cover was awful. The Kubert cover was really bad. I don't know. I'm grimacing having to now I'm two issues in. I'm gonna have to buy the third to see what happens, but I'm just like, oh, I wish I hadn't bought the series.
I really liked it. I thought it was fun. It was neat how they brought back. It's like, what are you going to do with the Blackest Night stuff? Well, you're going to pit them against each other's relatives. And in the Batman family, there's so much familial tension and deaths and all that stuff that, I don't know, I enjoyed it.
Yeah, no, it's great. I mean, this is a very rich, you've got a lot of dead people in this family, a lot of tragedy. So the idea that they're going to fight their demons is great. And I love that Tim came flying in like Han Solo at the end. And, and I love the whole stuff with Gordon and Barbara and trying to survive through
dead
this
man.
Yeah. Through the dead man inhabits Barbara, something she can run around and beat people up. And it was just very exciting. I like the idea that the people having the most success against the dead people are the Bat family.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're the least capable of defending themselves, naturally. And they're the most ingenious of all of them.
And at the same time, I thought it was like big, high action tension, like zombie movie running away, flamethrowers, lots of stuff. Every page is just, kinetically sort of vibrating. So I thought it was fun.
Mm-hmm.
But,
To each their own.
To each their own, indeed. We want to take a second and thank our sponsor, iVerse Comics. Everyone's all about digital comics and comics on the iPhone these days. And if you're into that, then you have to check out iVerse Comics. They just released a new version of their app, which is just 99 cents in the iTunes Music Store. And if you buy it, you get 30 free comic titles. And if you're an iFanboy listener, you will also get entered in a chance to win an iTunes gift card. So you get those 30 free apps, and then you can buy more comics and read those through the phone. And that's different because before each comic was its own app. So now this is a way to just have them in one place.
Spending 99 cents to get 30 free issues, that's like...
You can try out a lot of stuff. I know there's a lot of really interesting and good comics on there. They were talking about Killer of Demons recently on Around Comics. I know that's on there. I know Proof is on there. I know Atomic Robo is on there. All sorts of Star Trek
stuff is on there.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. If you are not an iPhone or iPod Touch owner, you can also win. And all you have to do is send out a tweet that includes both at iFanboy and at iVerse Comics, and you'll be entered to win that iPod Touch. And again, you only need to tweet the once.
And you need to tweet by this Wednesday, the 16th.
Wednesday, the 16th. That's the end. But make sure you have the at iFanboy and at iVerse Comics. That's important. So get over to iversemedia.com/iFanboy for those details. Enter yourself in there, and it can't hurt to try out. It's a neat little system. It works better than you would think.
Cool. So Blackest Night continued in Green Lantern Corps number 40.
Corpse.
And
it's just obstinance now.
There's just a whole lot going on in these Green Lantern Corps.
That would be my only complaint about this book, because it's almost too much.
Yep.
Almost. I'm not complaining. I'm just saying... Mm-hmm. One or two more things in here, and I'd probably be lost. But it's the middle of the battle, so it makes sense that it'd be chaotic. But still, it's just like almost too much.
It's all over the place. But it's okay. I mean, it's all right. I mean, I guess the big moments in this were the fact that Kyle and Black Lantern Jade kind of sneak away from the battle to have a little conversation, and Jade tries to seduce Kyle into crossing over, but he fights back. That was the big moment for me, at least, in reading it.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot going on. There's a lot of good stuff. I liked the fly versus Guy Gardner battle.
And Guy gets stabbed.
Yeah, guy gets gorged with the guy with horns. But I mean, it was good.
That's
was
the femoral good. Artery, man. He's in rough shape.
Well, couldn't you just use the ring to sort of, you know, hold the blood in?
I suppose.
Put a cork
think
in
about
that.
This. The Blackest Night conceit, like basically every character, they have to think of somebody who's dead in the character's past, and every character has like eight people dead in their past. So it's like an embarrassment of riches.
Yeah.
And they're trying to use everything they can, but I think in some instances they gotta let some of those chips go.
Yeah. I don't know. I we're still very much in the oh shit's hitting the fan stage of Blackest Night, and I'd like to take the next step.
I think we're soon. Yeah. We're still in the first two issues, which is still Act One basically. So we're still, you know.
Yep.
Act two should be starting soon.
Cool.
Ultimate Avengers number two, and I forget that Carlos Pacheco is one of my favorite artists.
Yeah.
And he doesn't. He for me at least, I don't see his work a lot. I feel like he draws infrequently, which he may not. I just may not see what he's doing, but. When I see the stuff he's doing that I'm reading, it's fantastic. It's just, I love his work.
Some great stuff in this. Some great Captain America stuff in this issue. Pacheco's killing it. I mean, the Red Skull is just creepy looking.
Ultimate Cap.
Yeah.
The idea is that right before he went back to war, Cap knocked a girl up, and the government took away his baby, and baby went angry. Which they didn't. The only downside is they didn't do a good job explaining why. The baby went evil, which they might later.
Yeah.
Baby went bad, became the Red Skull in a very, very brutal and vicious way, in a way you'd expect from Mark Miller, which would be worse if Kick-Ass hadn't come out this week.
But the big swerve was that the chick he knocked up ended up marrying Bucky.
Yep.
Yeah.
Someone's going to get pissed. Someone's going to get a geriatric punch to the face.
Exactly. So, cool.
Red Robin number four, and it's quickly becoming my second favorite Batman book, which I don't count Detective because Detective's sort of not involved in the whole Reborn storyline. I sort of forget because it's not in that group. In this issue, Robin has been searching in the Middle East for clues to Batman's whereabouts because he doesn't believe that Bruce is dead. And he finds the cave from the last page of Final Crisis with the cave painting on it.
Oh, really?
Yep. Very interesting. So we've kind of been hinting that we've been leading this way, but in this issue he finds it.
Did he say that, oh, this doesn't count, Batman's left-handed? No, that didn't happen.
It didn't happen. He didn't pull out his laptop and start blogging about it, but he found the cave painting, and he found another cave painting previously in a museum. We didn't get to see what he'd found until this issue. So he's been tracking Batman cave paintings across the Middle East, apparently. So it's a really nice idea and interesting to not let the strings, you know, fall from mm-hmm. Final Crisis.
Superman Wonk, number seven.
I love that abbreviation, by the way, Wonk.
Yeah,
it's hysterical.
I'm fine with that.
World of New Krypton, hysterical.
I think they're just increasing the neat little things that happen. Basically, in this issue, Zod puts Kal-El in charge of everything. Just when
of
it looks like
of the military.
Yeah, of the military. Just when it looks like, you know, the military is finally going to go nuts without Zod. And then there's the other thing that was notable about this issue, I thought, was the really good scene with what's that guy's name? Tyr? T-Y-R?
Tyr.
Superman's guide around New Krypton when they first got there.
It's Jimmy Olsen.
Yeah, the betrayal that took place. There was a nice little three-page scene.
Well, if I could briefly talk about that scene, is what I love about this book and the direction of Superman lately has been that he gets mad in this scene. He gets angry at this guy. And I love when they allow Superman to show emotion. When he's a sort of a Jesus-like character who doesn't ever has no infallibility and is sort of always even keel, it's kind of boring. But when they allow him to be human, it's great. And here he gets mad at this guy who was his friend and betrayed him, and it's totally natural and an understandable reaction. And that was the best part of the book.
There's also a really nice big two-page spread in this one, and then finally, like the cliffhanger that you're left with at the end is like one of those giant comic book things. You're like, well, that's a big idea. That's pretty neat. Yeah. Fun issue.
This remains
like
the best Superman book. Yeah.
Yeah, I would say. That's a good quote. It's also the only one he's in.
Cool. So if you went to ifanboy.com this week, you might have saw our staff writer Sonia had a quick chat with Philip Bond, who is the artist on Red Herring, and Red Herring number two came out this week, which is quickly becoming one of those surprise surprise books that I'm very happy to be buying.
I really liked Red Herring 1, and I thought this was a lot better than that.
Yeah.
By the way, that's Philip Bond in this book.
Yeah.
He's the glasses guy who looks like John Hodgman. Anyway, it was like a lot more character development. You got to know who these people are that are running around, and you get an idea of sort of the bigger conspiracy thing that's going on. It's just a fun conspiracy kind of
what's
book.
What's interesting is that I don't quite know what it's about yet, but I'm totally grabbed by it. You know, like,
and I just like that it was better and more like it just all came into focus a little more than in the last issue, which made it one thing. But it's got this kind of quirky little sense of humor if you look at like the names of the businesses and the little things going on in the background that fit the art very well.
Yep.
I wish he would draw more.
I know.
God, yeah. So good. So.
Yeah, he's a good drawer.
Cool.
I don't know about you guys, but my last couple pages were totally blank. Last three, four pages.
The planetary preview.
Nothing on those pages.
So, and finally, War Kings, Who Will Rule one-shot came out this week, continuing the cosmic saga.
I thought that was over.
It's not. It's just, this is the bridge book before the next chapter of the story, Realm of Kings. And this focused on the funeral, the Shi'ar funeral of Empress Lyandra. And I love Gladiator in black mourning costume.
What I mean, screw the costume. Like, his characterization through this was awesome. A lot of fun.
That was great.
The thing is, the War of Kings ended very abruptly. It was just kind of over. Like, I feel like they were charging towards an end, and then it was just over. And this is a very nice denouement, a very nice cherry on that, on top of that, which I thought ended things up and set you up to go forward.
Yeah,
it was a very, very good issue.
And positioning it to cross, you know, to intersect with Guardians of the Galaxy and the Darkhawk stuff is continuing. That's going to move into Nova. And I just, Abnett Lanning cannot do wrong. It's wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
So
as long as they don't have anybody else in there monkeying around with their stuff,
right.
They're writing everything, so it's working out good.
Right. Exactly. Good stuff. So if you go to ifanboy.com/comics, you see all the books that came out this week. You can rate and review them. And we like to highlight some of the reviews every week. So this week, wanted to highlight O. Caroline's review of Models, Inc. number 1. And she gave the story a 5 out of 5 and the art a 4 out of 5. And 1.2% of the iFanboy – oh, no, actually, that's incorrect. Nobody made it their pick of the week. Sorry about that. There's the error.
There it is.
And
who's the winner this week, Jimmy? It's Fred from Tucson.
Oh, Caroline says, Paul Tobin's writing is fun and witty. It reminded me of Banana Sunday, his collaboration with Colleen Hoover, more than his previous Marvel work, though I've enjoyed that too. The art by Vincenzo Villagrosa is a great part of the story as well, showcasing fun and slightly ridiculous fashions on female body types that aren't the top-heavy Barbie doll superhero standard, and Val Staples' colors really shine. I was already won over by the main story, but the most of the attention about this issue focuses on the backup star and real-life fashionista Tim Gunn, who I guess is on Project Runway. Sorry, guys, I fail at reality TV. In any case, the backup story was a hoot even for someone who isn't a Runway fan. So I was looking for pans of this issue, but it looks like she liked it. I flipped through it. I didn't buy it. I don't understand why they're doing it, but that's, you know,
March Fashion Week here in New York.
Yeah.
It's a, you know, big deal in New York. It comes out the same day. Tim Gunn's in it. He's a big deal.
Did you read this? Did you read it?
I got it. I read about four pages and decided I'd continue it later.
The Tim Gunn story. He dons the Iron Man costume, and he actually the dialogue that was written says, "This suit may not be fully charged, but I will make it work."
Like, is that a RuPaul joke?
No, that's it's his catchphrase on.
Oh, that was RuPaul's catchphrase in the 90s.
Yeah, but anyway,
you know what the thing is?
Also,
Gunn was
four
doing
colorists, four colorists on the Tim Gunn story.
I'm not so interested in the Tim Gunn story. I did you know, buy it for the main story, so I will finish that eventually.
Well, I think the thing about him though is that he was doing press like all over the place all week.
Yeah.
It's a big deal.
Yeah.
But he keeps bringing it up, and they've mentioned the comic all over the place, and so, you know, trying to get other audiences.
That's
who
fine.
Knows if this is the best way to do it, but what do you got?
They right. got new bosses now. They got to sell.
Yeah.
Our second user review is from Through the Brush, and she was talking about Life and Times of Savior 28, number 5, the book I feel very guilty about not having read yet. Gave the story a 5 out of 5 and the art a 5 out of 5. Is this correct?
Yes, it is.
A power percentage of 4.6%. That is pretty high for a book.
That only got like 25 pulls.
There was a lot of different POWs this week.
Yeah.
A lot of them. It's obvious why the big two comics companies would never publish this comic. Its central premise, that a superhero might realize that punching people isn't the way to solve problems, completely undermines the foundation upon which superhero comics are built. I encourage anyone interested in superhero comics to give this series a chance. The last issue is a bit rushed, largely due to the condensing of story from issues 6 to 5. Condensing the story from 6 issues to 5. The story as a whole, however, stands tall as an analysis of the superhero genre and the world that created it. Following in the hard-to-fill shoes of Watchmen or Dark Knight Returns, but with more of a DeMatteis trademark hopefulness than either of those two texts could bear to contain. Add Mike Cavallaro's art, which is clear and bright and absolutely perfect for the story, is the icing on the cake.
I never heard of this book. I had to look it up. IDW publishes it, and now I want to. I definitely want to get this one.
I have all 5 issues.
Yeah.
My comic store guys. Mike Cavallaro, the artist, shops at my comic store. So yeah.
He's part of the Activate Collective. He's done some other. He does all sorts of different kind of work.
Right, and my comic store guy handed me the first 2 issues one day and said, "You should read this." And I've been getting it ever since. I just haven't, gotten around.
Sounds
to
reading great. It. Sounds really good. So
I've only heard
good
things.
On my stack of to read books.
Cool. So go to ifanboy.com/comics and write your reviews and do your polls and rate your comics and let everyone know what you think of the comic books. And before we move on, I want to thank our sponsor, Audible. Audible is one of the best places to get audiobooks. If you enjoy reading, you might enjoy listening to audiobooks, and you can download them to your iPod or any device to listen that you listen to music on. They've got over 60,000 titles across all genres, no matter which way you spell it, including science fiction, romance, nonfiction, technology. I was browsing through their catalog. They've got a ton of great books. So if you go to audiblepodcast.com/ifanboy, we got a special offer for you. You can sign up. You get a free audiobook to try it out, plus a 14-day trial of the service. So what do you got to lose? Go to audiblepodcast.com/ifanboy and actually wanted to make a pick, a suggestion for you to go check out. Check out The 10-Cent Plague, The Great Comic Book Scare and How It Changed America by David Hajdu. And this is a great book that I've read great reviews about, covering the whole comic scene of the 40s and 50s leading up to The Seduction of the Innocent, Frederick Wortham, and the shutdown of the comic industry in the 50s. Really fascinating historical stuff.
Neato.
Yeah.
Sounds good. Hey, you may have noticed we had a new book of the month this month, Asterius Polyp by David Mazzucchelli.
Woo!
Now, normally, what we do is we will talk about it here for, 10, 15 minutes or something like that. But this time we decided we're going to do a longer version of that and give it its own Booksploded podcast. So look for that in the near future. You'll see it on the website and we'll promote it in all
and
the usual
too much,
places.
Too much to talk about in 10 minutes. So.
And seriously, Absolutely. And I wholeheartedly cheered when Josh made it the book of the month this month, and take the time to go download that podcast and listen to it because this book deserves talking about. So
you want to talk about a review that kind of wrote itself. Yeah. Like I was like, well, what am I going to do? And it was just blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
Okay, that's amazing. Enough. That's good.
So, can't wait to talk about it. So go listen to that one. It's going to be awesome.
So that'll
when it
be coming
comes
out.
Soon. It's don't yes. look for it now. It'll be out in a couple weeks.
Don't look for it now. You can read the review, though. Go to the website, to the top of the website. It's going to be there all month, and you can read about it. There's no spoilers in that review, so you can give it a read and see if it's something you might like. Yeah. However, I don't know if anybody out there noticed. Did you guys notice this? But there were some big news in the comic industry lately.
Jennifer Mender's
doing
out?
A book with John Romita. Yeah, that's it.
Did somebody join a new book?
Well,
someone's exclusive.
Normally we don't really talk about industry news and stuff on this podcast. We try to focus on the comics themselves and the stories. But these two news stories are probably so big that we figured it warranted a little discussion. And if
for no other reason to stem the tide of emails saying, so what do you think?
Yeah, exactly, because a lot of you want to know what we think. So what we're talking about is last week you might have heard that Disney announced plans to acquire Marvel, which is huge. And then this week it was announced that DC was making some organizational changes and Time Warner was stepping in and forming a new company called DC Entertainment, which would be owned under Warner Brothers. And two big execs from the Warner Brothers world stepped in, and Paul Levitz, the publisher and president of DC Comics, has stepped down. And a publisher is still yet to be – his replacement is yet to be named. And basically the whole world gets turned upside down. Or does it?
Yeah.
Or does it?
Yeah, that's true.
Or nothing changes whatsoever.
It should be important.
Either or.
It should be important to preface this conversation that we have no inside information. We are going to be doing some speculation.
Yes, we have no. We haven't spoken to anybody at Marvel or DC about this. We don't know. We don't know the ins and outs of the business. This is all our conjecture and opinion and stuff like that. So
the only information I have that's inside is that on Tuesday I am going to be interviewing for the job of publisher at DC Comics.
And you put listing me as a recommendation. We talked about that.
Is your meeting at 1:30?
It's at 1:30. Are you at 2?
Mine's the 1. Yes, I'm at 2.
I wouldn't want that job with a 10-foot pole. So good luck.
I would take that job.
So because all your publishing experience. So let's dive into Marvel Disney first. ultimately, my kind of quick analysis is that I think it's a great thing. I think it's a very good thing. I think it's a good move for Disney. It's a good move for Marvel. Marvel's been kind of a scrap, you know, while they've been a public company, they've kind of been, you know, very tight on spending, and they've been kind of a scrappy, you know, independent company in terms of, you know, the world of business. Now they've got the Goliath of Disney behind them and all the licensing opportunities and all the things that you can fantasize about it. If there's any negative that's going to come from it, it could be from the distribution angle, which, as we get to talk about DC, the underlying effects of both these moves probably will hit distribution and hit the direct market and retailers, but who knows?
It's not going to be soon, though.
It's not going to be soon at all. It still has to be approved by shareholders. Both shareholders have to approve it. Yeah. So,
I mean, the Marvel thing hasn't actually happened yet, and that's key.
Yeah.
I think one thing that was really interesting about Marvel is then I was thinking about this even a day or two before it happened. And by the way, when it happened, I saw an email. Somebody was like, "Disney bought Marvel," and I kind of regarded it like it was spam.
Yeah.
And then, like, a second later, my head went, wait a minute, was that real?
I didn't believe it at all. I totally didn't believe it. Yeah.
And then I went back and I was like, oh, this is for real. You know, I was thinking about it, and I think that people have heard us talk about how Marvel books, for the past couple of years, basically since Civil War, have kind of all gone into a lockstep motion. And you've noticed this, and people have complained or liked, you know, whatever. But
what do you mean by lockstep? What do you mean by that?
Event after event, all of the books are marching in the same direction, where there's more of an editorial mandate than, you know, from 2000 to 2005-6, you know, it was when these guys were all showing up at Marvel, the guys who are the big guys now, Bendis and Brubaker and guys like that, and they were all sort of doing their own thing and lending their voice to Marvel, and it was very much a kind of a golden age for me. I mean, that was the just great, great books after Marvel Knights. And then around the time of Civil War, you notice that everything is this one editorial thing. They're all marching towards the Civil War, and then they're all in the Dark Reign, or then they're all in the Secret Invasion and the Dark Reign. And what you did was, to me, it's sort of rounded off the singular voice of all of them, because they're, I mean, while each book does have the voice of the writer, they're all heading towards the same place. Right now, all the books are fighting Norman Osborn, every one of them.
If you look at that from a business point of view, my speculation is that they were doing that in order to increase sales, because my guess is that after dragging the company out of bankruptcy and being successful in setting up the movie properties and Iron Man success, they wanted to show that the publishing arm was successful. And remember, we had all those weeks when like 40 Marvel books came out in one week, and it happened to be the last week of a financial quarter. And the last issue of Civil War shipping, you know, pushing out from Q4 into Q1. I think Marvel's
$3.99.
I think
covers.
The $3.99. I think Marvel's been on the block for at least 2 years, and they finally got somebody to take notice and buy them. So it all kind of makes sense in that regard.
From a business standpoint, it makes perfect sense, and you know, good on them, I suppose.
Because the thing you got to remember, as much as you love Captain America and as much as you love the X-Men and all your characters, there are shareholders who like dollars lots more.
And they're going to win in the end. Every decision is going to win.
Exactly. And if you look at the financials of this, the shareholders of Marvel made a lot of money last week.
They got a payout of $30 a share in just dividends, I think.
It was. I mean, like, a lot of people made a lot of money when this happened.
And it's also – like, when we started – like, when I came back to comics, 99, 2000 – Marvel stock was pennies.
Yep.
I mean, it was nothing. It was junk. And
man, we should have bought.
And I remember going, I've got like $20. I should buy a bunch of. And like, Jesus. Yeah. You know what I mean?
So, I mean, if you want to hear some more educated opinions, Jason Wood, who we had on the show for episode 199, he's on 11 O'Clock Comics. A couple episodes ago, he did a great – he's a financial guy. He's a stock guy. And he did a great analysis of the Marvel-Disney deal. I go listen to that because he knows a lot more about the ins and outs of it, how like Disney's the number one licensor of products and Marvel is number four. And so now they basically – Disney just, you know, is blowing away their competition. By the way, Time Warner, DC is number three. So it's all about licensing. It's all about stuff like that. But the question is, with distribution, will Marvel stay with Diamond, stay with direct market, or start to move their books towards the Disney's already existing distribution model with their books and things like that? And that's the big question. That leads into this DC maneuver with Paul Levitz stepping down. For those who don't know about Paul Levitz, he – pretty much is one of the people who architected the direct market in the 80s. And DC and Diamond have a very great, long-standing relationship. And him stepping down affects DC not only from a creative standpoint, could also affect it from a distribution standpoint.
And also, like, when you talk about DC and Paul Levitz having a thing with Diamond, you know, It should also be important to note that while he's the head of this big giant thing, when they set up the direct market the way it is, like, he insisted that there was a place in previews for independent comics.
Yep.
Like, he saw the value of that. So before anybody refers to him as the, you know, the Leviathan, the head of this whole thing, like, he's a guy who loves the comics industry. Now, whether you agree with his decisions or not, I don't think the place he's coming from can be questioned.
Paul Levitz is an industry titan. He deserves a massive amount of respect. He's done so much for the comic industry. The direct market has done great things as well as been a problem. You know, it's one of those things where I sit and I try to wrap my head around it, and I can see both sides of it.
Sure.
You know, and it's unfortunate to see Diamond make changes this year that cut out those independent publishers that Levitz tried to protect and keep in. I don't know. I mean, a lot of the stuff – what worries me is about distribution and the retailers, and a lot of the potential scenarios we're talking about here, Marvel moving their distribution to DC, the idea maybe Time Warner / DC buys Diamond. These are all words and feelings that are very similar to what happened in the mid-90s when Marvel bought Heroes World and the comics industry collapsed. The industry, everybody thinks the collapse of the 90s happened because of Rob Liefeld and Chromium covers and all stuff like that. No, that had something to do with it, speculation had something to do with it, but also it was the distribution and the distribution wars that happened in the 90s. That's what killed it. So
the thing is, it's funny because back then it was the smell of money.
Yeah.
You know, and before back then it was driven by wild sales of the comics themselves, and now it's licensing. Being driven.
Yep, it's licensing the movies. And that's the thing is that, like, and that's the other thing. A lot of people, I've read a lot of articles on websites and blog posts and things like that. A lot of people think that this Levitz move was in reaction to the Marvel Disney thing, and it might have been in reaction in terms of announcing it. And actually, Connor, you said that we found out that it actually is. But
well, yeah, I mean, they pushed up the announcement.
Right, they pushed up the announcement. But the decision to do this, what's her name? The woman,
Diane Nelson.
She was announced months ago. Like at a big corporation, you don't make snap decisions like this.
You can't. It's like turning a Titanic around.
Exactly. So this has been in the works for a while. I doubt Levitz was pushed out. I mean, he might have been pushed out, but if he was pushed out, it was months ago. You know what I mean? Like, and so, like, this was all coming. This isn't in reaction. This isn't in direct reaction to Marvel Disney. This isn't in reaction to how the Arkham Asylum video game is doing. This isn't in reaction to how
really
bad
reaction
Watchmen
to
did.
The movies.
Yeah,
it's the movies. I mean, this is a long overdue move, I think, on DC's or
well, it's
Time
like
Warner's
Time Warner
part.
Woke up and realized what they had.
They've been squandering their properties, I mean, you know, for years, for decades.
Yep.
Marvel finally turned it around, said, we're going to control the stuff. We're going to put out good movies and make tons of money. And Time Warner's twiddling their thumbs because they're a behemoth. Yep. And this is a move to streamline that process and say, hey, we're going to put this one woman in charge of making sure these projects get made because they're not getting made or just sitting there not making money when they could be making money on a Batman movie and a Superman movie and a Wonder Woman movie and a Flash movie and a Green Lantern movie. Meanwhile, they're not making any of those movies.
And I think a big part of it also was everyone talks about the Watchmen movie, and the Watchmen movie was, you know, it was a success. It made its money back. It wasn't a huge success. It wasn't a blockbuster. But also Time Warner had to pay a lot of the profit it made to Fox because they fucked up the rights. And that happened under Levitz's watch.
And the thing to keep in mind, people are freaking out. Diane Nelson has a track record. She's been in charge of the Harry Potter franchise in terms of licensing it through Time Warner, the movies, making, you know, not the books, but all the stuff that's come out of the books and come through Time Warner. She's been in charge of those. She has a track record of doing quality projects. Those are quality films.
Yep, exactly.
You know, so we're not going to – I'm hopeful. I know the Disney Marvel thing, I don't know where it's going to go. I'm hopeful for the DC Entertainment thing.
The sad thing, though, about the DC Entertainment thing is I think that the Marvel-Disney thing will have a less of effect on the Marvel Comics products that we all read. Whereas this DC move, I think, will impact the comics.
Well, you know, I mean, it's possible that they both will. I mean, it's possible Icon will go away. I think it's more than likely
that everyone's saying Icon's probably going to go away.
Maybe they'll get the last issue of Kick-Ass out before it all changes.
Exactly.
But
yeah, I've heard rumors that I've heard rumors that projects are already moving away from Marvel because of this. So,
I would be surprised that both, if you know, she claims in an interview she loves the stuff Vertigo's doing, and Vertigo's been around forever, and they've been part of Time Warner forever, so you wouldn't think that suddenly Vertigo would go away, because they do make money off of that, and the Losers movie's coming out. But, you know, Disney is more a family brand.
Yep.
Yeah, you know, but I don't buy that, because Disney – but see, that's one of the fears that you keep hearing, but also Disney's released a lot of things over the years that you don't think of as Disney because they come
Miramax.
From others.
Yeah.
Right.
But Miramax is
one
now.
Example.
It's totally toothless
right.
now.
But it wasn't. But at the time when they bought Miramax, people were like, oh, they're not going to do anything anymore. But they released Pulp Fiction. So, I mean, I think it's a question of it's not coming out under the Disney name. So it's not necessarily a foregone conclusion that it's going to affect the comics themselves. The thing that I keep hearing is that Disney's been pretty good about letting the people who know that business continue to run that business.
Yeah.
And, you know, like as far as Joe Quesada and Dan Buckley, and like if it's not broke, I don't think they're going to fix it that much at this point.
Yeah.
As far as comics go.
Yeah. I believe that more, but I think whoever becomes the new publisher of DC will affect the future of the DC publishing line, as it should. You know,
awesome. So. But I think they're also just going to go, okay, this is this guy, Jeff. You should meet him.
Yeah, well, they've already done that with the movies, it sounds like, with Shazam and Flash. So, yeah. So
so we don't know. It's going to be really interesting to see. I wouldn't open up a comic shop right now. that's what I would say.
So that's our 2 cents. So and we'll see what happens. But the immediate thing is the comics are coming out next Wednesday. Don't worry. They're not going anywhere. So
it'd be funny if they didn't, though.
It would be very funny. Like, or yeah,
like we were all wrong. They both shut them down.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Wednesday's canceled.
So. But I.
So if you have
it, part 3 or 4, we're poor.
So normally we do emails and voicemails, but because we talked about the industry and all this, and we had a lot of books this week, we're going to skip them. So be sure to email in at contact@ifanboy.com, as well as call into our voicemail line at 1-888-FANBOYS. It's 1-888-326-2697.
And if you go into your comic store Wednesday and it's gone, you can go to DCBS. They got monthly specials up to 75% off, with 40% off major publishers and flat rate shipping of $5.95 on all U.S. orders. You can buy anything that's listed in previews while it's still listed in previews. With over 5,400 trade paperbacks in stock, you can track your orders online. You can do it all at DCBService.com.
Nice.
Cool.
So there was a little contest we just got to wrap up real quick. There was the Thirst giveaway from director – the movie Thirst from director Park Chan-wook. And we were giving away a signed poster signed by the director and the soundtrack. And the grand prize winner for that is Michelle Petz. And there are three runner-up winners. Winner-ups. You're all winner-ups are going to get the soundtrack. And that's Jason Bullman, Michael Poteet, and Richard Chapoteau. Which are those people?
Congratulations, and they are all iFanboy members, and you can be registered for future giveaways, and we're going to talk a little bit about how you can become an iFanboy member. But before we do that, real quickly, Windy City Comic Con is coming up next weekend. My word. and our friends over at Around Comics are the organizers of that. I'm going to be attending it. So if you live in the Chicagoland area, it's like $10, and there's like 90 creators that are going to be there, including people like Jeff Darrow and Scotty Young and Mike Norton, and like tons of people are going to be there. So so if you want to meet me, hang out, meet some great creators, go to WindyCityComicCon.com. That's WindyCityComicCon, C-O-M-I-C-O-N.com, and buy a ticket, show up. It will be awesome. And just want to let everyone know that Connor and I recorded a podcast to talk about Greg Rucka and Steve Lieber's movie adaptation of Whiteout. If you look in the feed, it's the episode right before this one, or you can go to ifanboy.com and listen to it, and we want to hear what you thought of the movie.
We have another podcast called Murmur, and episode 7 is out this week, and that's been us talking about the fall TV lineup.
It'll be fun.
All the stuff we're excited about, TV starting in the United States basically this past week, and me and Ron and some other people talking about what shows we're excited for.
Yeah, it's going to be cool. I'm very excited to see. And before we move on, I forgot, I also appeared on the Awesome by Comics podcast this week. So check that out. It's a great podcast. We'll put a link in the show notes, so definitely check that out.
Didn't know
you're
that.
Cheating on us.
Sorry.
Somebody told us that.
Yeah.
What the hell?
They came to my house. They knocked on my door. They said, can we do a podcast? I was like, all right. So,
let me get out of this towel.
No, but Evie and Aaron do a great podcast. Everybody should check it out. It's called Awesomed by Comics. It was a lot of fun. It was much – they talk about – you think we prepare. Whew. They had notes and they were all prepared. They had bits. It was amazing. So
don't prepare. Really. Takes 10 minutes to put the stuff in the script. All right. We had the Thirst giveaway, and you can only win stuff through our giveaways if you're an iFanboy member. And September and October are going to be big giveaway months. We've got a big package of books and stuff to give away at the end of the month, which we're going to do. So if you want to win that stuff, you become a member. And you do that by going to iFanboy.com/store, and you can become a member for $4 a month or $42 a year. And that gets you the iFanboy prize pack, which includes a comic book from one of our collections, some buttons, and a sticker. Or you can become a higher-level member for $10 a month or $100 a year. That gets you the prize pack of the comic, the sticker, and the buttons, and also an iFanboy member's T-shirt. And it really helps us out. We really, you know, we have costs and things that incur, and we really could use the support, and we're all appreciative of every new member we get. And if you want to win prizes and giveaways and things, that's the best way to do it, become an iFanboy member.
And if you also want to help us out and you don't want to become a member, there's a real simple way for you to do it. Go to ifanboy.com and click the banners on the website. There are a couple of banners from our friends at Full Sail University, as well as Audible, as well as you know, they're just Ivor DCBS Comics, DCBS. Or, yeah. Just you're on the website. You don't want to spend the $4 a month or something. Fine. Click some banners. Go to Full Sail. Get some information about their video game training program. It's pretty cool. Help us out. It helps us out.
Here's something you can do. You see that Fandango banner that comes up there? If you click on that and then bookmark that, and every time you buy a movie ticket or something, we get a little something from there.
Yeah, it'll be good.
I bookmark that one. That's just one way.
Yeah. So
you can check – sorry, that's just shameless. You can check out ifanboy.com for the written pick of the week review from Ron on Kick-Ass number 7. It's 7, right?
Yep.
And more in-depth stuff. We talked about the Philip Bond interview and the best covers of the week and just all the discussion that takes place all the time. And you can pick your books and all that stuff. So get to ifanboy.com. We are very, very, very proud of that website. And every time someone asks a question and it's on the website, we're like so sad because it's a good website. Go to ifanboy.com/about to find stuff about us, social networking links, and all those kind of things about other ways to communicate and become part of the iFan base.
Don't forget, we got the shirts. We got the Power Responsibility shirt, and the Herm shirt is back for pre-order. We're going to start fulfilling the orders at the beginning of October, so you can check those out. $15 a month, ifanboy.com/store.
There is a video show that we do that comes out from Revision 3, and we talked about this fall break, and then it just never happened. there's one more show that's going to be the second half of the episode 200, the Q&A of us having to think on our feet. And fans, and it's fun. And then after that will be a little bit of break. But there's one more coming up, so look forward to that.
And then after that, we'll be taking a little break for a little while, but we'll be back with the video show. And if you want to get on the video show, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com or leave a voicemail at 1-888-FANBOYS, 1-888-326-2697, and perhaps we'll answer one of your questions on a future show, audio or video.
They can't get on the video show.
Well, they can send in a question.
Can I be on the show? You know, that's logistically very difficult.
True.
Well, maybe. We don't want to say never.
Maybe we'll do a contest. You never know.
That's true.
Yeah.
We'll have to shoot somewhere else, not in my house. If you like the show or if you don't like the show, either way, write a review on iTunes. It helps people find it. We really appreciate every review we get. Better than that is to tell your friends at the comic store, your friends at the AA meeting when you think of things to complain about. I think people complain at AA meetings, right? I don't know.
No. Well, sometimes.
They don't complain? Sometimes you complain.
I guess.
Stupid podcast drove me to drink, and then I crashed a car. Then I got a DUI, and now I'm here. It's court mandated.
I think this is
about
wrong.
This,
off the rails.
This feels wrong.
It feels a little wrong. Right, though. A little right.
No.
Just a little.
This is wrong.
All right.
Well, that said, I think we've said enough this week. So until next week, I'm Ron.
Hi, Ron. Sorry. Keep coming back. It really works.
That was funny. That, I'll give you credit. That was good.
I don't need your validation. I'm Josh. Hi, Josh.